Stay tuned for Bubba Neart Live. But first, here's our Denver Bible Church update. Let's talk about the Christian cliche, all sins are equal. Hi, this is Pastor Bob Enyart, pastor of Denver Bible Church. Have you heard it said that all sins are equal? Is that true? All sins are not equal. That's an incorrect teaching. Jesus said in John 19:11, "The one who delivered me to you has the greater sin." Jesus said that in John 19:11 to Pilate, "The one who delivered me to you has the greater sin." Now, if all sins were equal, then Jesus would have been in error. Jesus is not in error. He is God the Son, the Creator, the one who came to earth to live and die for us, was resurrected from the dead. He is the truth, and he's better informed on these subjects than the rest of mankind. And Jesus distinguished between one sin and another as far as the severity of sin. And he said to Pilate, "The one who delivered me to you has the greater sin." In 1 John 5:17, the Apostle John wrote, "All unrighteousness is sin, and there is sin not leading to death." Now that gets us into a theological discussion, something we cover in the manuscript, The Plot, but we won't cover that now. Jesus said that some will be beaten with many stripes and others with few. That's for the punishment of their sins. If all sins were equal, why wouldn't punishment on judgment day and in hell, why wouldn't it all be equal? Why would some be punished more severely than others? The Bible says that teachers have the greater judgment. A teacher's sin is worse than his student's sin because the teacher has responsibility over the students and the student has responsibility for himself. Jesus said in Matthew 11 that Bethsaida, the town of Bethsaida, he said, "Bethsaida, it will be more tolerable for Tyre and Sidon in the day of judgment than for you. And you, Capernaum, it shall be more tolerable for the land of Sodom in the day of judgment than for you." Why would the people of Capernaum get punished more severely than the Sodomites who were destroyed by God with fire and brimstone from heaven? It's because Jesus Christ himself came to Capernaum, and to whom much is given, much is required. Revelation 18, verse 7, speaking of Babylon the Great, "In the measure that she glorified herself and lived luxuriously, in the same measure give her torment and sorrow." Do you notice how the punishment fits the crime? That's a godly concept. The punishment fits the crime. Jesus said in Matthew 23:14, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you devour widows' houses." That is, they get the widows to give them a lot of money because they're lonely, you know. "And for a pretense, make long prayers. Therefore, you will receive the greater condemnation." I thought all sins were equal. No, not all sins are not equal. The scribes and Pharisees will receive the greater condemnation. When Christians say that all sins are equal, thinking unbelievers look at us as though we're nuts. And you know what? They're right on that score. I heard a Christian on Christian radio some years back here in Denver say something. We've immortalized it in our Nicer Than God Bible study album. This is what was said on Denver Christian radio. "Stealing a Tic Tac is no worse than murder because all sins are equal." Huh? Jesus said, "The one who delivered me to you has the greater sin." This is Pastor Bob Enyart inviting you to Denver Bible Church this Sunday at 6200 West Hampton. Call us for directions if you'd like at 303-463-1707. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Benyart, America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. Have you checked out the debate? Well, we've been talking about it on the show the last week or so, but the debate on the internet, does God exist? At theologyonline.com today, a couple hundred people online throughout the day. At any given moment, you go to theologyonline.com right on the homepage. It tells you how many people are currently logged in, currently active, and there's a couple hundred all day long. And many of them checking out the debate in the center ring, Battle Royale 7, Does God Exist? Bob Benyart versus Zaketh. And what I'd like to do is bring you up to date on this debate. Now, last night's show, we gave a summary of the questions and up to my second post. And we are now in the third round of the 10-round debate. Now, for those of you who don't get on the internet, don't go on to forums. A forum is a place where you can write something, write a comment or a letter, and post it so that other people could read it. And typically a forum could be a free-for-all where anybody says anything on any topic, and it could be difficult to follow. On the other hand, there are some forums that have rules. And Battle Royale, the Battle Royales on Theology Online are moderated. There are plenty of rules. Each person has to post within 48 hours of the previous post. And the topic in this battle is, does God exist? And the atheist, Zaketh, that's his name online. My name online is Bob Benyart. Zaketh got the first post, and so I will get the last post. And it's really neat to see how many people have been checking this debate out. And in the grandstands, you could go into the grandstands, which is a thread next to the center ring. The center ring is where the two opponents are slugging it out. And then in the thread next to the center ring, anyone could make their observations, make their own arguments, discuss how the battle is going. And as of right now, there have been 864 posts in the grandstands for this debate. 864. And if you go to the grandstands, what you might want to do is click on the last page, because there are 58 pages. It's divided up into 58 pages. Not if you print it. If you print it, it'll be 300 pages. But it's divided up into 58 pages on your screen. And you go to the last page, back up maybe 4 or 5 pages, start reading from there, and you'll see, you'll get the drift of what's being talked about. Well, what I'd like to do is pick up from where we left off last night. Last night, I gave a summary of the questions that I have asked to Zaketh and his answers, and then the questions he asked me and my answers. And then at the end of the summary and my second round post, I said, now let's dig in. So let's pick up from there, okay? Okay, and the first topic that after the question summary was on truth. And I listed Bob's question one, does truth exist? Zaketh's answer one and his question four was this. What is your definition of truth, Pastor Benyart? That was his answer. What I asked, does truth exist? He came back and said, what is your definition of truth, Pastor Benyart? Bob's answer number four, I had already answered other questions he asked. Truth is, you just answered my question with a question. Truth is, you just answered my question with a question, Zaketh. And here is my definition of truth. Truth is a statement of reality. And then I gave an example of what Zaketh wrote in his second round reply when I asked him, does truth exist? And he said, what is your definition of truth, Pastor Enyart? What is true for the Muslim is that Allah is God. What is true for the Christian is that Jesus is God. What is true for the Jew is that the Messiah hasn't come. And so he's, you know, it was my impression that he was missing the point. So I responded to that. What is true in the above, he gave these three bullets. What is true for the Muslim? Bullet. What is true for the Christian? Bullet. What is true for the Jew? So I responded, what is true in the above is that you listed three different belief systems. If you can't admit that is true, then how about this? What is true is that you presented three bullets. If you can admit that, even taking just that baby step, then we have a starting point. And then you will have fulfilled my request to know if you believe in and can accept or even just admit to truth. In the future, if you feel... Okay, so then I asked Zakith, if he thinks that a question needs to be clarified, please clarify it, offer a clarification, I will, and then answer the question. And that way we get closer to the heart of the debate. But Zakith, I write to my opponent, the atheist, but Zakith, I had already clarified my definition of truth in my original post, sufficiently enough to answer your bullets, when I wrote that if no God exists, then all the time spent chasing religion, humanity could have been more effectively pursuing truth. That makes it clear that I'm not presupposing the existence of truth means I win the debate. In my experience, many atheists are hesitant to accept truth, any truth. And the way you handled this, as I expected you would, reinforces the theist suspicion that atheists react almost as though they fear truth. And you know what? If we fast forward it to his third post that was put up on the site this morning, now the clock is clicking down for me. For me, the clock is ticking down because I have 48 hours from when he posted to get my next post up. And if I go on Theology Online right now and look at the clock, what does it tell me? It tells me I have 1 day, 13 hours, and 48 minutes to go. All right, 47 minutes and 57 seconds. So if we fast forward to his post of this morning, he said, I will concede that truth exists with all these caveats. He gives these caveats that the definition I gave is not so good and da da da. Listener supported radio here. This is Bob Enyart with a live commercial break. The phone number for calling into the show is the same number for our order line. So if you're interested in the Bible, well, then we have some materials for you. What do you prefer? Audio tapes? Videos? Reading? How about a best-selling unpublished manuscript called The Plot? You know, someone called today from Indiana, and he ordered The Plot, all five Bible study albums. And he gets a discount. Instead of ordering them individually, he got a discount and saved maybe $25 or so. But the very first, the Plot album, a six-tape album of an overview of the whole Bible, is $32.95 plus shipping and handling, 30-day money-back guarantee. And that introduces you to the Bible from a perspective of the whole story. The storyline of the Bible, and it's fascinating. And sadly, most Christians are not real familiar with the whole story of the Bible. And so if we randomly open up to a book in the Bible, open to a chapter, and start reading, Christians are generally somewhat confused or bewildered. because we don't really don't have a high degree of expertise in the scriptures in the church. It's sadly not there. And so to remedy that, there are many ministries trying to remedy that. The way we do it is we start with an overview of the whole Bible and then dig in. Or you could get the plot manuscript. The plot manuscript for just $49.95. Actually, that's a lot for a book, right? But this is a best-selling, unpublished manuscript. I don't know if it'll ever be a collector's edition, a collector's item. You think? Nah. But we have sold thousands of these manuscripts, and it goes through, it gives you an overview of the whole Bible, and it is so much fun to be confident about knowing the Word of God. It changes your life. And for the rest of your life, you open up the Word and you feel good about what you find there. So give us a call, 1-800-8-N-YARDS, 1-800-836-9278. You could check out our overview of the Bible in print, in a manuscript, or in audio tape albums. So call us, 800-8-N-YARDS. We're back. Bob and Yurt Live, 1-800-8-N-YARDS, 1-800-836-9278. So at Theology Online, with hundreds of people at any given moment all day today on the website and checking out the debate and other – it's a huge website – checking out other topics of interest too and posting and joining in on the fellowship and the teaching and the debates that are going on. Folks would have seen Zaketh's latest post in the beginning of round three. And in that round, he said, I will concede that truth exists. But he said, given the definition, which he called a tautology. Now, what's a tautology? A tautology is... well, it's a couple different things, but a needless repetition. A reasonably meaningless statement, like either it will rain tomorrow or it will not rain tomorrow. Or this would be a tautology, truth is true. That would be a tautology. But truth is a statement of reality is not a tautology. Truth is a statement implying it's a concept, it's an idea, it's an expression or a definition of reality. It's a statement of something in reality. It's a statement of reality. It's not a statement about reality, because you can say something about reality that may not be true. But truth is a statement of reality. Okay, just like a church might have a statement of faith, and truth is a statement of reality. And if their faith is real, then their statement of faith is also true. But let's go to a phone call, 1-800-836-9278 in Denver, Colorado. Ray, speak your mind.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
Doing well, sir.
I just had a question. You said that when Jesus taught about difference in sin, commenting earlier.
Yeah, that was in our Denver Bible Church update segment at the right before the beginning of the show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
My comment is just that that when Jesus came before he died, he was teaching under the law, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so now that he's died and the covenant was fulfilled, I guess to me the sin is just, it's all level at the cross. I mean,
all right,
the only sin you're going to go to hell for is the sin of unbelief, correct?
Okay, so when Jesus was talking about Judgment Day and some being punished with many stripes and others with fewer, and to whom much is given, much is required, and it will be more tolerable in the day of judgment than for Sodom than it will be for Capernaum. We could go to the book of Revelation. We could go in the epistles, all referring to the time after Christ rose from the dead and this truth is timeless. Can you see that, right?
Yeah, I can see it. I'm just reading that.
Ray, let me.
Jesus came and took away my sin.
Hey, Ray, let me add something.
But I still sin.
Hey, Ray, let me add something else for your consideration.
Okay.
Unbelievers are not under grace; they're under the law.
Yeah.
This is the age of grace for believers. Unbelievers are under the law. The Apostle Paul says that all the world is sinned and is guilty before God. And all the world is under the law, he says,
mm-hmm.
in Romans. And so if all the world is under the law and the law declares them guilty before God, they're not under grace. And so the law has more severe punishments for some crimes than for others. Like if you steal, you pay restitution. If you murder or kidnap, you get put to death. And even in the New Testament, even in the epistles, we're told that, you know, the epistles use those laws. Now, there is a huge Christian debate about how do we use or not use the law as Christians. That's a huge theological debate. And we cover that debate in great detail in the Plot manuscript and in our The Tree Bible Study album, The Tree of the Knowledge of Good and Evil. So we invite people to check those out or to come out to Denver Bible Church where we address these things directly.
Oh, okay.
All right, Ray?
All right. Well, thank you, and God bless you tonight.
You're welcome. I appreciate your call. 1-800-8-NYARDS, 1-800-836-9278. So Zacheth said, he asked for a clarification of truth. It would have been so great if he gave a clarification, said, here's what truth is, and I believe this is true. But he only begrudgingly agreed with this definition of truth right here, which he called a tautology, which means it's somewhat meaningless. So we really didn't get a clear answer from him whether he believes in truth, and he should give his own definition for truth and tell us if he believes in that so that we can get a clear statement from him. Wouldn't that be great? A clear statement, a clear, unequivocating, from an atheist, a clear, unequivocating, no caveat statement of belief in truth with his definition of truth. Because after reading his begrudging admission, I don't know if he believes in truth or not. I can't tell. I just can't tell. But at any rate, it shows to me. Then he goes on to say that because there's more agreement about truth in science for things like the boiling point of water and the circumference of the earth, there's more agreement in that kind of truth than there is in religion or politics. So he says, therefore, truth regarding religion is murky and it's not valid, can't be true because there's disagreement. But of course, there's huge disagreement regarding truth in science also. So at any rate, let's see here. So I pointed out to him that we have a suspicion, we theists, that atheists are afraid of truth, that they're afraid of it. So anyway, he conceded that he believes in truth, that truth exists. And then let's go on to the next topic. I asked him about right and wrong. Does absolute right and wrong exist? And it's interesting that if you ask an atheist, at least on Theology Online, this is what's been in vogue in the grandstands and throughout the forum. If you ask an atheist if they believe in absolute right and wrong, they argue no, there's no such thing as absolute right and wrong, typically. And they'll ask you for an example. Give me an example of something that's absolutely right or absolutely wrong. And if you say murder, then they'll try to add conditions to a murder to where the murder was necessary to save someone. If you say rape, they'll add conditions to where the rape was necessary to save the world, which is sick and untrue. But just their adding conditions shows you that they're struggling with their conscience. Because why can't they just say freely, rape is not absolutely wrong? Why do they have to go through the trouble of saying, well, if you're saving the world, it's obviously not absolutely wrong? Well, forget saving the world. Just if it's for entertainment. But they have a hard time coming clean on that. So they add all these conditions. And then, so anyway, the question about absolute right and wrong, I had to repeat that to him because he refused to answer it. Is there such a thing as absolute right and absolute wrong? And he again answered a question with a question, and he asked me to define absolute right and absolute wrong. I told him that an absolute wrong is a wrong that cannot be justified. A wrong that violates how could something be justified? Well, if it meets the demands of justice. I'll give you an example. If a woman commits a petty theft, she steals a slice of bread. And so she's convicted of stealing a slice of bread, and then she's executed. Well, that violates the demands of justice because the punishment should be equitable. The punishment should fit the crime. And thus we have a violation of the demands of justice. And so an absolute wrong would be executing a woman whose only crime was that she stole a slice of bread. So, but they cannot admit that absolute right and wrong exist. And if you executed a woman solely for stealing a slice of bread, they could not admit that that is wrong. Of course, they say that Ronald Reagan was wrong in everything he ever did, said, or thought. But nothing could be right or wrong. But it's wrong to teach creationism to kids in the public school. But nothing can be right or wrong. But it's wrong to impose pro-life morality on the country. But nothing could be right or wrong. But it's wrong to try to outlaw pornography. But nothing could be right or wrong. It's wrong to try to outlaw prostitution, but nothing can be right or wrong. There is no right or wrong. So atheists, when they deny truth, they deny right and wrong, they don't live that way. They live as though they dearly believe in right and wrong. They'll defend themselves against others. When they're accused of doing wrong, they'll try to justify what they did. Right? They try to justify it. If someone is as far away from God as anyone you've met, and they kill someone else, they committed a murder, typically they try to justify it. Think of Charles Manson, right? Charles Manson out in California. Susan Atkins was just recently up for parole, and I'm glad she didn't get parole. She should have been executed. And Charles Manson, when asked about the murders, he says, oh, that was not my idea. That was their idea. So he's trying to justify his involvement in it. Bob and Yart Live, 1-800-8-NYART. This is a live commercial break, and that is our phone number to call into the show. But also it'll get you to our order line. And if you enjoy studying the Bible, you could consider our monthly Bible study albums. Now, somebody today ordered Exodus, the Exodus story, and the Exodus code. And those are two neat Bible studies, and they're fun albums. The one has 9 tapes, the other has 6 tapes. There's a lot of secular evidence for the Exodus story, the 10 plagues and the Jews leaving Egypt and the parting of the Red Sea and Pharaoh being destroyed in the waters, his army being destroyed. So there's secular evidence for all that, as there is the recording of the story in the Bible. And we go through that in that album, but that's a 9-tape album. And then Exodus Code, the Exodus Code is God's idea of justice, and that's in 6 tapes, a 6-tape album. And if you order those, you know, separately, one month, one another, well, the first album is $38.95 plus probably about $5.50 shipping and handling. But if you'd like to get a Bible study album mailed to you every month without paying shipping and handling and a set price of $34.95 every month, you'll get a Bible study album. Most of them are 6 tapes. Some are 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 tapes. And 1 or 2 are 4 or 5 tapes. But it's so much fun to once a month, you get a package in the mail, you open it up, and it's a Bible study album. If you have a tape player at your home or in your car, during the course of the month, you've listened to, well, let's say you've listened to the whole book of Proverbs, the godly wisdom that God put in that book. Or how about our album titled Nicer Than God? How nice is too nice for Christians? How about the book of Revelation? That's fun. And the world's greatest theological treatise, the book of Romans. And then The Last Days, we've got an album titled The Last Days. And how about Miracles and Healing or Predestination and Free Will? Once a month, you get a Bible study album, and before you know it, give yourself a year, 2 years, and you will know the Bible better than almost anyone you know. That's what we hear from so many people. So call us or check us out on the web at kgov.com. Hey, I'd like to invite you to go to theologyonline.com and check out this debate. It is just so much fun. The Battle Royale 7 on Does God Exist? And I'm logging in right now myself again and to the homepage, see what's going on the website. And you could be a part of it. It is fun. You could go to the grandstands and weigh in with your comment, your observation about how the debate is going. Right now, at this moment, there are 144 people currently active on theologyonline.com. That's pretty neat. All right. Now, the next topic after is there right and wrong, I asked Zaketh, the atheist, about the origins of the earth. And I asked him this question. So, Zaketh, my third question is a true or false question. There are only 3 alternatives to the origin of the universe. There are only 3 alternatives to explain the existence of the universe. True or false? I asked him to answer that question, true or false. There are only 3. True or false? Either it was always here, or it popped into existence from nothing by itself, or something outside the universe created it. Those are the only 3 conceivable alternatives. There are no other conceivable alternatives. And so I asked the question, they're true or false? There are only 3 alternatives to the origin of the universe. And he knows that at the top of my post, I do a summary of the questions. And so here will be Bob's question number 3. True or false, there are only 3 theoretical alternatives to the origin of the universe. And Zaketh's answer, number whatever, answer, and Zaketh did not answer. He didn't answer. Why couldn't he say true or false or other or explain why it's not a reasonable question? Atheists are afraid of the truth. Atheists are afraid of truth. They are afraid of truth. So, on this question of the origin of the universe, I had warned in my very first post, I warned Zaketh that when asked to explain complexity, to deal with complexity, like, for example, life is so complex. A living cell is so complex. How could it start from non-life? About a million things have to happen all at the same time to get at one living cell. Not a million thing, millions of things. There's a million proteins. Millions of things have to happen simultaneously if you're going to get a living cell. So they say, well, maybe something simpler than a cell. We started out with something simpler. So, and that's what Zaketh said, and that's what many atheists say. So I asked him to explain the simplicity. How could something be simpler than a cell and function as a living system? It's not possible. But I warned him. I said, when you try to deal with complexity, don't add more complexity in trying to explain complexity, because then you get further from an answer, not closer. If you're going to explain how complexity arose, you have to start with something simpler if it arose by some natural process. So I made that warning. And regarding the origin of the natural universe, here's how I started to address the atheist. I warned against atheists rationalizing complexity by introducing more complexity. Yet in proposing an origin for the universe, you offer atheist Stephen Hawking's theory that, quote, allows the existence of infinite numbers of parallel universes, unquote. Zaketh, you struggle to explain the origin of our universe, and so you take on the same task for, say, 42 billion universes? Come on! Explain the origin of our universe without contradicting basic laws of science if you can. On the other hand, if you can be honest, just say my belief system in the origin of the universe is based on no physical laws. And just say that. Say, I take it on faith. I have no evidence or no laws to tell me that it could happen, but I take it on faith. Just say that. I take it on faith. Just say that. It'll be easy. I take it on faith. All right. Now, it's sort of funny what was going on. So at any rate, I asked him about, could you tell us true or false? Are there three alternatives to the origin of the universe? He didn't answer the question. So then on the origin of life, once again, I talked about complexity. And this is what I wrote to Zaketh at the end of round two. On complexity, my full warning was this, quote, a toddler gets away with his ignorance, explaining that bread comes from the store. But I will not accept an adult's rationalization of complexity by his introducing even more complexity. So what did you go and do, Zaketh? I asked you to explain how pre-cell life forms could be simpler than cells. And you gave us the example of viruses. Viruses are less complex than cells, but they require cells for viability. And thus, a viral system is significantly more complex than a cell. So, you take the cell's complexity and the virus's complexity, and you add the two together, and it's greater than a cell's complexity. Oops. So, I warned the atheist, Zaketh, when you're trying to explain how something as complex as the cell developed, please don't make something even more complex than the cell. Think of something simpler, just conceptually, not in detail, just conceptually. How could something conceptually function as biological life and be simpler than a cell? And so the first, after I warned him, don't increase complexity when you're trying to rationalize complexity, he gives us a viral system that's more complex than a cell. So I wrote, now I'm not using, this is what I wrote to Zaketh. I'm not using Jedi mind tricks, putting out bait, nor laying traps. But if you keep doing things like this, our audience will think someone's throwing the battle intentionally to cover the spread. Zaketh, come on. So he said a viral system is evidence of a pre-cell, simpler life form. No, that's more complex. More complex. And then he said prions. He said also prions are evidence of pre-cell life. Oh, really? A prion? Now, he has the benefit of most of the people reading don't know what a prion is. And they think, wow, prion sounds very primitive, and it must be simpler than a cell, which it is. And so maybe he's got a point. So I have to respond to his, I have to educate the readers on what his evidence is. So here we go. I ask him to give an explanation of how life could have begun simpler. And he adds complexity. And the added complexity problem, Zaketh, that you introduced with viruses also applies to prions. Prions being misfolded proteins. That's what a prion is. It's a protein. A protein is a molecule in your cells, and they do all kinds of jobs, 1,000 different kinds of proteins, doing very complex chemical work. And so proteins are three-dimensional. They're three-dimensional, and they have shapes to them. And they're made sort of like a chain that has to fold the right way into the right shape, like folding a paper airplane. If you don't fold it right, it's not going to fly. If you fold it really well, it could fly well. Well, a prion is a protein that folds incorrectly, so it's broken. It's broken. So I said, so you introduce prions. And that adds complexity also. Prions are just misfolded proteins, which, when present in a cell, cause other similar proteins to break, producing disease. Zaketh, theists believe in disease, you know, and broken proteins do not explain simplified pre-cell functionality. So what's going on? Why does he keep increasing complexity to explain how life started? One 800 8 NYART, 1-800-836-9278. That's the call-in number for the show, but also during this live commercial break, I'll tell you that's also the order line number. So during the week, now we don't always have a staff here, you know, 40 hours a week. We're a small operation. But leave your name and number, and we will get back to you. Right now, our office manager is in Mexico trying to make some real money. Not actually, just on vacation. But you could call up. Hopefully we'll be here to answer. Or 24 hours a day, call, leave your name and number. We'll be happy to get back to you. And let's say earlier we talked about reading the plot manuscript, listening to our Bible study albums. We also have seminars on Bible study in Bible study album form on predestination, free will, the overview of the Bible, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That whole incredible story that will just knock your socks off. But then how about our videos? We have videos that if one interests you, you could call and order it or go online to kgov.com, check them out. There's a description of each video. Or you could sign up for a monthly video for $24.95 a month, no shipping and handling. We'll automatically mail you out a video. And so what have we got? We've got this, a Bible tour of Israel. We went to Israel. We brought a bunch of friends, a videographer, and what a neat video we have. How about this? Get out of the matrix. Bob versus a college philosophy class. When I got to debate them on, does right and wrong exist? Does truth exist? How about live from Las Vegas on the convention center floor? I got to debate about a dozen liberals. Oh, it was fun, on many different topics. And then morality, why God forbids sexual immorality. Wow, that's an interesting topic. Why does God do that? Is it just because he's a party pooper? He created us and he said, oh, here we go. This will really bug him. So he outlawed sexual immorality. Why? Why does God forbid sexual immorality? Check out that video, Morality. So you can call us 1-800-836-9278, 836-9278, and get one video or sign up. Welcome back. Bob and Yart Live, 1-800-8-N-YART. That's 1-800-836-9278. So an atheist needs to explain biological life because it's so complex, it cannot arise in one step. And so they should be able to conceptually explain how it could arise in simpler steps. And what they need to do is address the functionality of biological life. They say things like, well, the first cell or the first life started in the primordial ooze. It started in the early ocean. Or it started in the ocean near a heat vent of a volcano. Or it started under the ice somewhere in cold soup. Or it started in clay. Or it started in wherever it started, address the functional requirements. Here are the functional requirements. That life needs to separate itself from its outside environment. It needs to communicate between its subsystems. It needs to produce hundreds of intricate compounds. It needs to repair damaged components. It needs to selectively emit raw materials from outside. It needs to expel waste. And mostly, it needs to reliably reproduce itself. So address those functional needs in this. Is there any way to simplify that list? Is there one of those bullets that could be done away with? Just simplify the list. Just say, well, it didn't need to process raw material. Just say that. And then we could think that through and think, well, could the first life have survived without processing raw material? Well, that doesn't seem likely. Maybe it could survive without reproducing itself. That doesn't seem likely. Maybe it did not need to communicate between its various subsystems. That doesn't seem likely. Maybe it did not have to expel waste. That doesn't seem likely. So I asked him, show us where some of these functional requirements could be done away with in early life. Show us. Just give us an example conceptually, not in any kind of detail, but just conceptually. And he didn't even take a shot at it, which is a bit discouraging. He just blew it off. Now, why is it that when a Christian debates an atheist, what's with these rules? The Christian addresses the atheist questions directly, and the atheist runs away from the Christian's question and does not address them. What's with that? Why is that going on? In the debate right now on theologyonline.com, the Battle Royale 7, Does God Exist? Bob Enyart versus Zaketh. What's with that? Why won't he directly, he doesn't even refer to the specifics of my questions. I quote his questions. I put them in quotes, and then I answer them directly. If my answers are wrong, I would love it if he could show me how they're wrong. That's fine. And if he could show me that something I say in my post is wrong, I will be thrilled. Thrilled. Because I'm not afraid of the truth. I will be thrilled if he could show me where something in my argument in this debate is wrong. But you ask an atheist the question, it's, you might as well ask a question of a stapler sometimes. Sometimes. Because typically the question is ignored. There's an answer. It's answered with a question. It's ambiguous. It's vague. Let's go to Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 1-800-836-9278. Ben, speak your mind.
Yes, this is Ben. I've listened to you several times, and I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I just wanted to make a few points.
Yes, sir.
About the Godhead.
Yes.
And I'm not sure where you're at on that idea, but there's one thing I believe that if not the whole Bible, but there's one thing that God left to Revelation.
Yeah.
And that is that Jesus Christ is Lord.
Yeah.
Because in the book of Corinthians, it says that no one could confess Jesus as God except, or Lord, except by the Holy Ghost.
Right.
And so there's a scripture. I'm sorry, I don't call in very often.
Well, that's all right, Ben. You're doing a good job.
I'm a little nervous, but
you're doing a good job.
In Luke 10:22, he wrote, all things are delivered to me and my Father, and no man knoweth who the Son is but the Father, and who the Father is but the Son, and he to whom the Son will reveal him.
Right.
And so when the apostle, Jesus came to his apostles, he said, who do men say that I am? And some said, some say you're John the Baptist, or some say you're this prophet or that prophet.
Yeah.
But the important thing was, who do you say that I am? And Peter answered, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jesus said, well, flesh nor blood hath not revealed it to you, but my Father which is in heaven.
Right.
And so did Peter go up to the Father in heaven and say, who's this man downstairs, or was it revealed by the Spirit?
Okay.
And so it was revealed by the Spirit.
Right.
And then when the Son reveals who the Father is to us, that tells us that the Son has to be the Spirit also, because it was revealed by the Son.
So, hey, Ben.
Yes.
Why don't you state your position clearly, and then you could try to defend it. Tell us exactly what you believe.
I believe that Jesus Christ is the only true God and eternal life.
So you don't believe that the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit are separate persons of the Trinity?
No, I do not.
Right. Okay. So there are, you know, there are, within Christianity, there's a Jesus-only movement. There are a couple different movements that say Jesus is the Father, and Jesus is the Son, and Jesus is the Spirit.
Yes, he was the Father in creation,
yeah,
the Son in redemption, and the Holy Ghost in the church.
All right.
And if we want to compare the Trinity, just let me make a quick statement about the Trinity, what I've read on it. See if you agree. The Trinity says that God is manifested as three persons. These three persons are co-eternal, co-existent, and co-equal. Okay, if we want to take any one of those points and compare it with the Bible, we can find out if it's true. In the book of John,
well,
Jesus
okay,
said,
Ben. All right. Hey, Ben, I just want to make it clear that that I disagree with you, but go ahead, make your point. And on,
okay,
and being,
in the book of John, Jesus said, my Father is greater than I.
Yeah.
And if they're co-equal, they can't, then the Father can't be greater than the Son. And so, but I want to make another quick point.
Yeah.
Like I started out, I said it's a revelation.
Wait, one second. You just took a definition on the Trinity, and there are some, by the Christians who are Trinitarian, they have some different views on the Trinity, but what they all agree in is that there are three persons in God, in the one God.
Ben,
listen. You just pointed out that because they said they're all equal, then the Father cannot be greater than the Son. Now, if that's rigidly valid logic, then it's also rigidly valid logic to say they can't be the same if the one is greater than the other.
Okay, there's a scripture. Just let me ask a quick question.
No,
Ben,
you only have to address that point. And if you can't, you can say, I haven't thought of that. And then we can go to the next
topic.
No. Breaking the rules. I put you on hold. Ben, I'll bring you back on if you'll address that point. Then, if you'd like, you could go to another point. Okay, Ben?
Okay, what was that point again?
Let me say it again. You made an argument that if people who believe in the Trinity say that all three are equal, then there's an error.
That's what I've read in the Catholic Encyclopedia,
yeah,
but I don't know.
Many people who believe in the Trinity will say all three are equal. Jesus repeatedly is shown as submitting himself to the Father and humbling himself before the Father.
Yeah, he gave us an example, so we'd humble ourselves.
Okay, but let's stick with your point. You said the three cannot be equal if the Son, if the Father is greater than the Son. The three cannot be equal. Well, if your reasoning is right, then we could also say that they cannot be the same if the one is greater than the other. If the one is greater than the other, they can't be the same because they're the same.
Yeah, but
so
it's only one being.
Ben,
God is a spirit, and there's only one great spirit.
Ben, the mathematical argument you're making that the
I'm not trying to make a mathematical argument.
Okay.
I'm just trying to say that Jesus is God.
Okay, well, quantifying.
And if he's a spirit,
Ben,
down as a spirit.
Hey, Ben, don't make me put you on hold again. Listen, I don't want you to make more of your argument. I want you to address that very point. And if you'd like, you could say, Bob, I don't have an answer for that point right now.
No, I do have. I'm Ben, right?
Give me an answer.
If I have a body and I have a spirit and I have a soul,
you're
then
not gonna
I'm
answer.
Only one being.
You're not going to answer.
I'm still Ben. You can't divide me up and make me five or six different parts.
Hey, Ben, you didn't answer my question.
But my identity
Ben, you made a different point. You need to, when somebody asks you a specific question.
I know what you're saying, but it's a revelation. That's the only point. When I first called in,
Ben, you know what you should say? If you have
a
revelation about God that many Christians don't have,
no one will get it except by revelation.
Ben, you should be more Christ-like than others. And if someone asks you a direct question that you don't know the answer to, you should say, I don't know the answer to that, but I still think I'm right.
Right.
That's
I
what you should have done. And if ever you think of an answer, feel free to call in.
But
this is Bob Enyart. Hey, we're about out of time, right? Where did the hour go? All right. Hey, I want to invite you to Denver Bible Church. Denver Bible Church, Sunday morning for Sunday school. Oh, it's fun. We have an informal discussion for an hour at 9:30 in the morning. Worship service at 11. Sunday night Bible study with Q&A afterwards at 6 p.m. This is Bob Enyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences. Do right.